Next speakers are from our compliance team, Maggie and Pam. Come over, and I'll leave the mic to you in a minute when I put your presentation up. In the meanwhile, you may start introducing yourselves.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Maggie Surad. I'm the head of the Contractual Compliance Department, and I'm very pleased to be here at the Newcomers Track. It's always a great opportunity to market what we do, and I literally mean it, market, because with this audience, we tend to celebrate our accomplishments, and we hope to do the same for you today. So with me in the audience, I have Pam Little, who is also a senior director on our team. And we have one of our newcomers. He joined our organization a couple of weeks ago. This is Jack. On the phone, we have many of our staff members participating from all different parts of the world. So again, today's objective for us to give you an overview about contractual compliance, and we leave some time at the end to take some questions. So our agenda is to share with you what is contractual compliance, how do we ensure and enforce our agreements, our contracts, and why is this important? Believe me, to be in the compliance department, you have to love what you do, because the satisfaction in this job comes from the node of the big picture. So the big picture for us here is about the ICANN community and about the compliance within the internet and the security of the internet. So where are we in the organization? If you have been on the ICANN website, have many of you been on the ICANN website? Have you done some research? Okay, good. So we are part of what is referred to as ICANN staff. We are sitting in the staff part, but look at this wonderful, complicated, multi-stakeholder model. So we are ICANN staff, but we really are providing the service in different ways and fashions. We have multiple stakeholders, different interest groups, different ideas, different expectations. The compliance organization, as we stand since the last ICANN meeting, we have grown our staff by 4 additional team members, and we are still growing. We still have additional opportunities for growth. So today we are 12 members in the department, and combined on the staff, we can take and address 7 languages. Why is that important? It's really important. It comes in handy when we are dealing with different community members. Sometimes the clarification and the discussion and understanding the culture and speaking to it in that language and that nuance, it gives it a better understanding, and it puts a different perspective than just speaking in English, which is a common language for all of us. But sometimes speaking it and addressing it in that native language and understanding the issue or the challenge, it can help us be better at what we do. The organization today is grouped in 4 different areas, actually in 3 big areas. We have a huge core team that consists of 9 people that is focused literally on the compliance perspective for both the registrars and the registries. We have subject matter experts and in different areas, but we all collaborate and work cross-functional team to be able to deliver to the contractual compliance aspect. We have a team member risk and audit manager. We put that function specifically on the side, but in reality, it is embedded in the compliance department. It is to serve all of compliance. Same thing for performance measurement and reporting, because it's very important to look at our data for us to internally address our issues, our challenges, our complaints, but also to be able to communicate and measure and give the community an update on where we are and what's going on. So contractual compliance, and we underline the word contract. Because if you work in any corporations or anywhere else, you know there is a huge aspect of compliance that's more corporate compliance or different aspects of compliance. But our scope is contractual compliance. So basically we use the contract as our compliance tool. So what's written in that agreement between ICANN and the contracted party is a set of rules and standards and expectations of performance. So the contract is the basis for our role and our scope. Who do we have the contracts with? I hope, I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the words registrars and registries. Are you pretty familiar with it? Okay. So the registrars are the companies that register the domain names. So today we have about 1,000 registrar accreditation agreements signed. So literally these are contract signs with registrars that we work and oversee and enforce compliance with. There are two types of contracts that exist today. The old one, as it's referred to as the 2001 RAA, that was initially done and it was an older contract. As the contract expires, the new renewed contracts and the newcomers are brought on with the 2009 RAA. The 2009 contract has better features, enhanced protections for the registrants, more enforcement tools for compliance to apply. So, again, as you evolve, and if there's a new amendment to the contract, it will evolve to the new version. But today, we work in those two areas of the contract. It is not only the contract that we look at for compliance. ICANN also has 8 consensus policies. They are all published on the website. We will give you a high-level update today what they are to kind of put it in a framework. But if you are in this community, it will be helpful to become more familiar with those policies also. So we provide a link here to the registrar directly, which is on the ICANN.org website also. Another set of contracted parties we refer to as the registry operators. These are the companies that keep the master file for all the domain names. That's the last three after the dot, whatever the top level domain name is. These are the registries, and we have 18 registry agreements today. So the top level domains, as you might know, is the .com is an example, .net. So that's called the top-level domain, and we have 18 agreements today. And the agreements are based, even though we have 21 top-level domains, some registry operators operate more than one. So we have, this listing is also on the ICANN.org website. So today, again, the contracts are with registrars and registries. So this picture, we're trying to do here is reflect that relationship, because as you become more involved in the ICANN community, you will be either a registrant involved in it or a member of a registrar or working for a registry. Whatever your involvement might be, you're going to have some questions or some areas of challenges or discussions around this area here. So today, the big bold arrows you see reflect the contracts we have today with registries and with registrars. Now, a registry also has an agreement with the registrar, which means if a registrar decides to use that top-level domain and market it and sell it, they go into an agreement also with the registry operator to provide that service. Now, many of you probably have a domain name or a website or something that you use the internet for. So you are referred to in that scope as a registrant, which is the user or the consumer of this domain name space. So also, when you go to purchase or to create a domain name, you engage with a service provider to give you or to provide that service to you, and there is an agreement between you and that service provider. Many registrars also engage with third-party companies, and they are referred to as resellers. So please keep that in your mind as you get more involved in the ICANN community. You will learn what is the scope of contractual compliance, because it's important from a level setting of that expectation. So again, the scope is with the registrars, registries, even though within the contracts, it does carry forward to the registrants in many times how they what they apply in the contract. So now that you know how our scope is, the complexity of the ICANN model, it's going to give you an appreciation why we picked our vision to be a trusted compliance service provider. You don't become a trusted service provider overnight. It has to be earned. We have, as we showed you on the bigger model, how complex and diverse our stakeholder model is. Our multi-stakeholder model is very diverse, a lot of different community members and stakeholders, also referred to as constituents. So in order for us to deliver a service in contractual compliance space, we have to be based on facts, on transparency, on communication, and hopefully through that approach, we can earn the trust of the community. How do we ensure contractual compliance? So we refer to it as a culture of compliance. In our multi-stakeholder model, we're trying to implement what we call a bottom-up approach. We have the contracted parties with whom we have these agreements with. We have launched, and now it's in pilot phase, the bottom aspect of the triangle. You see something referred to as a self-assessment. It's an industry best practice. What it means is basically we took the highlights or the main areas of the contract provisions and we created questions and we built a questionnaire to help us run an annual audit or an annual self-assessment. Think of it as a checklist. So basically, on an annual basis, we expect the contracted party to respond to us with facts, but they could also leverage that to train their own people or to make it as a checklist. Am I in compliance throughout the year? So this self-assessment is currently in pilot phase because we wanted to test how easy is the tool to use, how long does it take to respond to it, are the questions easy to understand? And then also we want to assess it from our perspective. Are we getting the right information? How long does it take to understand and process the facts that are given to us? What forms and formats and we're getting them in? So this pilot phase, which concludes in the next trimester, we will be putting together an analysis, how successful it was, what are some of the lessons learned, and what do we need to do before we launch it as a full-scale self-assessment. The other areas in the pyramid are the different phases of contractual compliance. We refer to them as the preventive, which is also the informal resolution, before it becomes a formal resolution. Our objective is to work with the contracted parties to bring them into compliance. However, as we all know, many will comply, but you will sometimes have some bad actors. And if they do not comply, then we have to move to what we call the formal resolution. So what does that mean from a process perspective? This picture is not truly a process map. If you've done process maps, you know they have to have swim lanes for clear roles and responsibilities. And we have that. But we wanted to put it in a form that is visible to all. What do we do with our contracted parties? When we receive complaints, so on the left side of the graph, you will see an intake. We receive complaints in different formats. and through our tools that you can also access from our website. Complaints can be logged. Our objective is in the long term is to centralize our tools into one complaint system. As the years evolved, different systems were added on based on the needs, and now we have three different tools we manage. So we hope to consolidate them, and we have a plan underway that we're working towards. But the most important thing is a complaint or a concern is logged through the contractual compliance team. The first thing the team does is evaluate, is this within the contractual obligation? Is this a notice? Is this something that has enough facts that we need to follow up? Or do we need to inquire about it? But the big picture to keep in mind is in the space of preventive, as we call it, the informal resolution, we are collaborating with the contracted parties at a three-step approach. The first step, we ask them to send us information. We can say, this complaint came. Please, we're inquiring. What is this legitimate? Have you done this? And if another complaint might be that they have the proof and it's something very specific and very factual, we might follow with a notice to a contracted party, say, this is a notice of your non-compliance. You have X days to provide us proof and to correct it. But the idea is we give them three chance opportunity through different ways. The first and most easy way that we all do today is email. That we use email to communicate a lot. We forward the complaint. We ask for specific facts to be responded by a certain date. If we do not hear, we don't have a response, or we have a response but not with all the important information that was requested, we follow up with the second step. Also, if by the end of that time frame we do not hear, we follow up with a third step. And the follow-up is increased. Email plus a phone call, and we end up also with a fax. So we try to approach the different ways of communication to make sure that the message has gotten to the contracted party. So in that space of informal resolution, again, it's collaboration and it's still in what we call good standing. If by the end of the third notice we have not received either the facts, the data, or a response, we escalate internally within the compliance department to enforcement, to enforce the message here. So basically, the enforcement then here is done through a breach notice. If you've been on the ICANN website, you go under compliance, you will see we do issue breach notices. At this point, the public is informed what's going on. We publish on the website. In the informal resolution, we do not publish because we really want to work and give the contracted party the benefit of doubt and time to cure or to fix the problem. But by the third notice, when we reach a breach, we issue it to the contracted party and we publish it on our website. Again, with the breach notice, the same thing. They have a certain time frame to respond and provide facts and cure the breach. Through the involvement of the enforcement phase, if this is a bad actor and they've had multiple problems or non-compliance, the decision is being made. Do we suspend? That means we stop new businesses, but they keep current until they fix the problem, or do we terminate? Those decisions are all fact-based and all also based on the history of the contracted party. So in the big picture, you see compliance split into two main areas, the preventive and the enforcement space. At a big picture, since my arrival into the ICANN organization, we laid out a three-year plan for us as a team. And we communicated this plan. Again, as a service provider in the space of compliance, we need to report what we're working on, how we're accomplishing it, and what are we targeting to get to. So in the 2011, which was last year, we focused on our internal assessment. Who are we? What are we doing? What do we have as standard operating procedures? And all kinds of area. But now in 2012, we call it the transformation phase. We have a plan that we are implementing for improvements. We're rolling out different new aspects from standard process, improved tools, improved reporting. And our ultimate goal is by 2013 is to reach a consolidated compliance system, and we start focusing on continuous improvement. Turn it to you.
Okay, hi. Can you hear me? I'm Pam Little with the compliance team. For the next few slides, I will talk about what we do and why it matters what we do. So this slide, you can see, is the domain name system hierarchy. And I hope in the next few slides, you'll see why it matters, why we do here day-to-day at contractual compliance. The DNS, the domain name system, is a very important part of the internet. And the internet has now become a very important part, if not critical part, of our life. So can you imagine life without internet? That's really our message. And therefore, those actors within this internet ecology all play a very important role to keep the DNS working, the stability and security of the internet. In our day-to-day work, we mainly deal with the contractual compliance, or ICANN contractual compliance. Maggie has shown you the contract map we have with contracted parties, which are registries and registrars. So this then reflected the issues we deal on a day-to-day basis. So the most common issues, these are examples, like trademark disputes. Although ICANN contractual compliance does not deal with trademark disputes themselves, these are dealt with by our four approved dispute service provider. But we do have then the registrar, once the dispute is resolved, there will be certain remedies that need to be implemented. Then registrars might have to implement a UDRP decision, which is the Uniform Domain Dispute Resolution Policy. Then that's when we come into play. There are also who is inaccuracy issues. Does anyone know what who is means in the ICANN world? Okay, so that's basically the registrant contact information of a domain name or registration data, even more than registrant contact. So we deal with a lot of inaccuracy issues. People report to us a domain name, for example, pamlittle.com has inaccurate whois, then there are some contractual obligations what a registrar must do when they receive such a reported inaccuracy claim. We also deal with a lot of transfer issues. When we say transfer issues, we mean inter-registrar transfer. Like, I want to transfer my domain name from one registrar A to another ICANN-accredited registrar B. Sometimes there are issues in that process, although there is a clear policy governing how that process should work. We also deal with issues coming out of reseller. Like, you might be registering a domain name, not through an ICANN-accredited registrar, but through one of those registrar's resellers. And the resellers, therefore, may not be always doing the right thing, not allowing to transfer name, or have all sorts of registration issues. We also have registration restrictions. As some of you might know, we have 21 GTLDs at the moment. Some of them are sponsored registries, like, for example, .XXX, right? Those registries would have certain charter, means a parameter or restrictions on who can register those domain names in that sponsored registry space. So these are the common issues we deal on a day-to-day basis. But please note, the RAA, Maggie mentioned, that's the agreement between ICANN and the registrars. It does not address the issues arising from domain aftermarket activities. So the RAA mainly addresses issues arising from domain registration, transfer, renewal, deletion. But as you might know, the domain names there is also a big market there for domain sale, buy and sell, or auctioning. We are not in that space. That basically would be just like a private transaction, and in-country law enforcement or consumer protection agency would have certain laws or regulation applying to those activities. And that brings me to the next slide. There are a lot of issues arising from using a domain name, which when you see on your browser, be it like a website. So these issues, domain use issues, generally are dealt with by law enforcement or consumer protection agency in various countries. And examples of these are like website content or spam, phishing, malware, cybercrime, etc. So if you want to have a very rough demarcation, ICANN contractual compliance and those contracts we have mainly deal with domain registration issues, whereas the law enforcement or consumer protection agency will mainly deal with domain use issues. These are general rules, but sometimes there are exceptions, but this will be a general guide. And this is just to share with the community, especially newcomers. Some people have some sort of misunderstanding or misperception about what the RAA allow ICANN to do. So ICANN is a party to the contract. So when things go wrong, people will say, hey, why doesn't ICANN do this? Why didn't ICANN do this? But the RAA does not allow ICANN as a party to that contract to address content on websites just mentioned in previous slide, or suspend domain names, or transfer domain names, or take over a registrar's operation, or terminate a contract without going through those processes that Maggie has mentioned. We have to go through issuing notice of breach, and if the breach doesn't get cured, then we'll move on to maybe suspension and maybe termination eventually. Or we also cannot access a registered domain name database. So these are all, you know, different actors in the DNS or the ecology. Registrars have certain things that they can do technically, registries also, but ICANN does not have the technical or legal authority to do those things. Maggie mentioned about the contract as well as the ICANN consensus policies. At the moment, there are 8 consensus policies. They govern different areas. I would not propose to bore you with all these details of the consensus policy. They are all here, and they're all on ICANN website. These consensus policies are all incorporated into the registry agreements as well as the registrar accreditation agreement. Therefore, they form part of those agreements and are applicable to registrars and registries. I will mention just a couple, maybe. The Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy basically is just trying to provide a cost-effective mechanism to resolve cyber-squatting claims. Who is Data Reminder Policy is a policy that requires registrars to send a reminder at least every 12 months to registrants to say, hey, check your Who is contact information, and if it's out of date or inaccurate, please correct the data. Inter-registrar transfer policy I mentioned earlier. So these are all very important policies that affect right owners, consumers, registrants, etc. So these are all ICANN consensus policy. There are 2 consensus policies, 7 and 8, are specifically applying to registries. So in the next few slides, I will share some of the compliance data with you. And the data relates to period from October 2011 to February 2012. We are sort of in second week of March. ICANN calendar goes with these ICANN meetings. There are 3 meetings a year, so our reporting period tends to also try to be consistent with those so-called trimester. So this is what we call T2 data. Compliance issues, we in the last trimester, you can see their distribution in different continents. 34% of them were coming out of the North America region, 34% from Europe, and 1% from Oceania which including Australia, where I come from. this slide is to show you, out of those complaints, what are the main issues or areas concerning those complaints. And you can see they are not really in volume order or particular order, but you can see we received total of in excess of 16,000 complaints. And the who is inaccuracy is the largest bucket of complaints, $9,500. We also receive a lot of transfer-related complaints and customer service-related complaints. Customer service complaints basically is like, my registrar charging me too much, I cannot contact my registrar, they are not returning my calls, this type of thing. These type of things are not spelled out in the contract, in the registrar accreditation agreement. So we categorize them as customer service issues, and usually we really cannot deal with them. We just forward the complaint to the registrar and say, hey, please get back to the complainant, resolve the issues if you can. So these are the different areas we receive the different complaints from. And as Maggie showed you our overall compliance process, once we receive a complaint, we assess whether it's a legitimate complaint, whether it concerns a potential compliance issue. When we say potential compliance issue, means they are within the purview of the registrar accreditation agreement or the registry agreement. If they are, then we will forward the complaint to, we will follow up with the party that is complained about, whether it's registrar or registry. Mostly will be registrar because a lot of them really are from consumers who have the interface or interaction with the registrars. So we follow that three-step process Maggie showed us earlier, share with you. We will send a notice or inquiry to the registrar, say, please tell us we got this complaint from this complainant. Tell us your side of the story, what's going on. And if the issue still doesn't get resolved, then we have that internal escalation from prevention to enforcement. And the next step will be the issuing of a breach notice to the contracted party. In T2, we issue two notices of breach to registrars and one suspension notice. In the next slide, you will see a further breakdown of what I said earlier about customer service type of complaints. You know, they even ask about CCTOD sometimes. But we, as you know, ICANN does not have a formal contract with CCTOD operators, so really this is not within our contractual authority to address, or other issues such as reseller or spam website content that is sort of outside of ICANN's scope or compliance scope. In the next slide, I will show you share with you the demographics, if you like, of where those complaints come from and how do they compare with where the region's registration numbers or the region's number of registrars. So, again, if we take North America as example, you can see almost 4,000 coming from that region, but that region has 95 million of domain names. And that region has 683 registrars, ICANN-accredited registrars, but 117 complaints against those registrars. So that translates into 0.004% against domain registration number and 17.1% against registrar number. Then you can compare with other regions to see, hey, maybe from us we can see maybe we need to pay special attention to a particular region because there's more complaints or compliance issues coming out of those regions. We also have agreements with registry, but registry, generally our complaints are mainly concerning registrar. We rarely receive a complaint about registries. Registries have a contractual obligation to provide monthly reports to ICANN. So based on what they reported to us in the last trimester reporting period, they were 100% compliance in relation to DNS, who is availability, and providing equal registrar access to the shared registration system. This one is very important. The equitable access to registrars. Each ICANN accredited registry has that provision in their registry agreement. So in other words, they cannot discriminate against one registrar. Every registrar will be provided with equitable access to that shared registration system. So they can all provide registrar services, those ICANN accredited registrars. At the moment, there are 10 registry operators in North America, 7 in Europe, and 1 in Asia. That landscape might change quite soon when we have the new GTLDs, or quite dramatically. So that's all from me in terms of our sort of operational or activity perspective. We're more than happy to take questions, if there are any.
I know we shared a lot of information with you in the first 30 minutes, but as you see on this slide, there are many ways to reach us. We encourage feedback and input and questions. If you do have a question or something to talk about with contractual compliance, please send it to compliance@icann.org. Just add to the subject that line so we know which area it's coming to us from, and we can address it and get back to you on it.
You said that ICANN has no contracts with their CCTLDs. How do you regulate your relationship?
I'm not managing. Maybe Global Partnership could answer that question. My understanding is there are a memorandum of understanding, you know, just a very informal documentation. So they still collaborate in terms of, you know, the technical coordination between ICANN management of the routes and the CCTLD operating as a CCTLD operator in country. But there's no as a formal contract, enforceable contractual obligation.
You don't consider the accountability framework a contract for that purpose?
Sorry?
There's a document that...
The MOU.
Framework.
Yes.
You don't consider that a contract for you?
That's my understanding. Maybe other ICANN staff could help answer that question because... Okay. So... We don't consider that as a contract. That is just a kind of collaboration framework.
Thank you.
It's not a legal
one,
right? No. I've got two remotes that are trying to type, but they're not here.
Hi. A question? Okay. Yes, please. What happened if there is a problem between... ICANN and the registrar, and you have to suspend or a suspension of the contract or terminate this contract. What happened with the registration agreement with the registrant?
That's a great question. I'll talk about suspension a little bit first. The suspension of a registrar is not a full suspension. It only suspends two activities of that registrar, which is it would not allow, means the registrar cannot register new domain names and cannot initiate inbound transfers. So all other activities remain business as usual during that suspension period. So it's just kind of a temporary, like a sanction. That's suspension, so it doesn't affect the existing registrations of sponsored by that registrar, okay, subject to that suspension notice. When we have a termination or non-renewal of a registrar, we would have ICANN has developed a bulk transfer process to transfer the domain or the registration sponsored by the terminated registrar to another ICANN accredited registrars. There's a whole documented process on our website. We would actually in some circumstances, there will be a RFP, like expression of interest, I'm sorry, to publish for a period, inviting interested registrar to bid to take over those registrations from the terminated registrar. This, it's all open. And then we would then assess the against a set of criteria which registrar is most suited to take over those registrations. And we do that in a very transparent and open way. Basically, really, our ultimate goal is to protect those registrants. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
No problem.
I know this is not really an ICANN subject, but I was wondering if you had to deal at all with the domain names issues that have been taking place in the United States against certain copyright infringing sites like megaupload.com or the Canadian online site bodog.com and all of those things. Yeah.
Okay. So if you go to ICANN.org now, you probably will see our CEO's blog yesterday. We have nothing to do with those.
No, but no country has complained or anything?
No country has complained to us?
Yeah.
About those seizures, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of the complaints. I have not been involved or seeing any complaints. But basically, we really have nothing to do with those seizures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
We're going to address a remote query. One of our compliance staff back in Marina Del Rey addressed the question for us on remote, but we're going to go ahead and read it out loud so everyone can understand the issue. What is this? This came from Matt online. What is the status of the jobs arbitration? Why has it been 9 months since the arbitration has been filed and ICANN has permitted it to lie dormant instead of aggressively prosecuting it? The response from Khalil Rashid of the compliance team was, the compliance team cannot address internal matters, including the status of arbitration proceedings or legal matters involving the organization.
But if you go to ICANN website, I believe there's some posting about this arbitration, which you'll find the latest. We have as much information as was published there. Another question online?
I'm waiting.
Okay.
There's actually a question from Faisal Hassan, but it is in regard to the CCTLD operation. So what it says is if the CCTLD operator run by the government in a country fails to provide reliable service, can ICANN play a role? And I can also, Pam, having said that out loud, take the question offline to our CCTLD representatives. And
yep.
I will, because it's a question here, I can also get the question back to those, the answer back. I'm sorry.
No,
Carla, could you identify yourself?
Carla Valenti from ICANN staff. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, no, ICANN cannot do anything regarding CCTODs, either if they are run by government or they are run by universities or whatever. You know, it's the entity that runs a CCTOD because they have sovereignty over their own policies.
Thank you.
Okay. Janice, do we have any more at the chat room?
Matt is typing back, but
Okay, we'll deal with that. Khalid is on the line anyway, and you can all get, join everybody else on the chat room as well. Thank you a lot, Maggie and Pam, for this presentation. Do you want to do a wrap-up at the end or before I close?
I think, as usual, it's always great.
It's always great to present in this forum. We started doing that last ICANN meeting. Thank you for this opportunity and your time. But we do want to encourage you to become active in the community, please. And again, if you have any questions and follow-up, please let us know. And welcome to the ICANN community.
And may I just add one thing? We have a lot of information posted on the ICANN website. The contractual compliance webpage has a lot of information as well. So if you are interested to know and learn a bit more about what we do, you can visit the website. Thank you.
Well, our next presentation is scheduled to take place in 15 minutes. Normally, we would continue because we have our colleagues here, but I don't want to disappoint the people who are, you know, adjusting their schedules on the remote. So we will take a break, which was before it was a bit shorter. So go enjoy the registration area maybe a little, and then we'll be back here at 4 p.m. Thank you.